We love to explain quantum physics and the mysteries of the universe, but the mysteries of finance, not so much. Intuit helps you demystify your finances through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Understanding standard deductions or interest rates can be very complicated and tricky, with big potential consequences. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hey, Jorge, how long do you think life on Earth will last?
You mean human life or just life in general on Earth?
So let's assume that humanity somehow manages to off itself. What do you think is going to survive?
I'm not sure we can. We have to assume that. It's looking pretty probable these days. Probably some of the stuff in the back of my fridge that looks pretty hardy.
It's been there for thousands and millions of years. Well, my wife would like that answer since she's a microbiologist. They are a tough bunch, microbes. But let's think bigger. What about multicellular life? You think anything like that could survive?
Like an actual, like, animal organism?
Yeah.
Don't they say cockroaches can survive a nuclear explosion? But I'm not sure that's true.
I'm not sure that's true either. I think it's just good PR by the cockroach lobby. But there is something on Earth that is even tougher than the cockroach.
I hear it's cuter, too.
That's not a very high bar to pass.
Hi, I'm Jorge. I'm a cartoonist and the creator of PhD Comics.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist.
And welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we go all around the universe and find interesting, weird, crazy little creepy crawly stuff to talk to you about and explain it to you in a way that hopefully you find entertaining.
Cute little creatures and also horrifyingly scary looking creatures. Sometimes they're even the same organism.
That's true. You know, there are lots of things which look scary when they're big and then are just cute and cuddly when they're small. Like if you walked next to a mountain lion, you'd be freaked out. But everybody's house cat is basically a miniaturized mountain lion.
It's all about the scale.
It's all about the scale. The opposite is true also. Take anything you find cute, a dragonfly, and make it the size of a school bus, and all of a sudden it's terrifying.
It's terrifying, yeah.
So some things are cute when they're tiny and terrifying when they're huge.
Yeah. And one it's of kind of like children too, you know? They grow up into teenagers, terrifying. Cute as toddlers, terrifying as teens.
Exactly, and especially terrifying if your toddler grows up to be the size of a school bus.
So today we're going to talk about something that's been on the news lately, right, Daniel? It's been apparently colonizing the moon lately.
That's right. This is a fascinating little creature. It's a bit of a departure for us because it's not quite physics, but it appeared in the news recently. And also we had a listener write in and say, this is her favorite thing in the whole world. And could we please talk about it on the podcast?
Her favorite thing in the world is this creature that we're going to talk about.
Yes, exactly. Is this tiny little creature.
That it may now be colonizing the moon.
Exactly.
So today on the program, we'll be talking about tardigrades. What is a tardigrade and why are they so interesting and how did they end up on the moon? That's the question we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, turns out they're a crazy little creature that can do things no other creature we know of can do. So it's quite amazing.
Yeah, and it's also a little bit cute slash terrifying at the same time. So if you are not driving right now and have a moment, you're welcome to pause our podcast right now and just go on the internet and search for images of tardigrades. And what you will find will both make you go, aw, and, oh.
If you imagine one the size of a school bus.
So yeah, tardigrades are these creatures, and they look wild, right? Like if you could look at a picture of them, they look like monsters from a science fiction movie.
They do look like crazy little creatures. And, you know, usually at this point in the podcast, we go out and we ask people on the street what they know about the subject. But today, we're doing something a little bit different.
Today, instead of starting with asking people on the street what they think a tardigrade is, we're going to try a new segment today called Ask the Wrong Expert, in which we bring somebody on who's a world-class expert on one topic and ask him about something completely different.
That's right. And I feel like this is only fair since I'm always springing questions on random people at UC Irvine. They're not experts in what I'm asking them about. And we hear them speculate and sometimes struggle and guess. So I thought it might be fun to also hear what happens when you ask an expert, a scientist, about something they don't know anything about.
And so today on the program, we have our good friend, Brian Keating. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, guys. Great to be with you again, virtually, through the ether.
All right. So Brian is a professor of astrophysics at UC San Diego's Department of Physics. He has over 100 scientific publications and holds 2 U.S. patents. Tell us, Brian, what are you an expert in?
My specialty is experimental cosmology. So I build new universes. And no, I don't do that. I build telescopes that can see invisible radiation known as the cosmic microwave background radiation. And my number one project now is going to be one of the world's highest altitude observatories on Earth called the Simons Observatory. I'm the director of it. And it's a collaboration of about 260 scientists on all 7 continents on planet Earth.
Wow. Brian, you're also the author of a book called Losing the Nobel Prize.
That book was published in 2018, and the paperback edition, the new and improved paperback edition, is about to come out any day now.
It's a really fun book for those of you who haven't checked it out. It chronicles Brian's adventures and misadventures in physics, which I think is really fascinating. I think it's really brave of you to talk all about how your experiment thought they saw something and then turns out they didn't.
It's a 2-part memoir, really. Well, a part of it's a story about what it's like to actually do experimental science. You know, a lot of our colleagues, you know, Daniel, you excluded, but a lot of our colleagues, brainiac scientists as they are theoreticians, which means that they deal with the esoterica between their ears and perhaps to be discovered centuries long after they're gone. And these include, you know, wonderful writers, Stephen Hawking, Brian Greene, Lisa Randall, et cetera, et cetera. And they're wonderful, as I say, and they inspire us. But an experimentalist, in some sense, has a unique vantage point on the process of how science is done. So I want to chronicle what it's like to do experimental science at the world's extremes and how it took me from a small telescope as a 12-year-old kid all the way to the bottom of the Earth at the South Pole, Antarctica, where I've been several times and done research along with a team that thought we had glimpsed the afterglow of what's called inflation. I know you guys have done some podcast episodes on that. I won't get into too much detail, but suffice it to say, inflation is the epoch theorized by theorists, our friends, Alan Guth and others, to have produced the bang in the Big Bang, what caused the expansion of the universe to accelerate incredibly rapidly at extremely early times. And when we made this announcement on St. Patrick's Day, the world was really in awe that we had discovered, as they say, the aftershocks of the Big Bang itself, so to speak. This set the world's attention and media on fire, with millions and millions of people around the world excited about these discoveries. And as I recount in the book, the extraordinary experience that it was like to once be the leader of this team and then go to being kind of on the outskirts of it, just as we were being positioned to potentially be the recipients of the Nobel Prize for the magnitude of this discovery. So it's a memoir of that process. And then along the way, immediately after the denouement, as they say, of that episode, I was asked by the Swedish Royal Academy of Sciences to nominate the winners of the Nobel Prize that I potentially could have been eligible for. So it'd be kind of like, you know, somebody coming up to you and saying, you know, guys, you guys have a great podcast, but can you introduce me to Neil deGrasse Tyson? Because I'd really rather be on that show. So it's kind of humiliating in a sense, and because I had aspired to win a Nobel Prize for a long time. And it really impelled me to look at the Nobel Prize and what it did to me personally, and perhaps to other scientists around the world too. So it was sort of cathartic in a way, and many scientists have written to say that they agree with the kind of conjectures and proposals that I put forth to reform what's arguably not just science's highest honor, but humanity's highest honor. There's really, you know, nowhere to go from there but down in terms of accolades that a human being can receive. So it's a memoir coupled with a little polemic, you know, a dash, a side order of polemicism on the side.
And have you received any feedback from the Nobel Prize Committee themselves? Are they open to your reform proposals?
Oh, yes. They embrace it wildly. They want to adopt them completely, change it to the Keating Prize.
They want to give you a Nobel Prize in literature just for the book.
Well, that's what somebody said.
Nobel Prizes.
Sabine Hossenfelder, I guess I'm sure you guys know. She wrote a kind of a critical review of my book, but in the end, she said the writing is so good, you know, maybe he'll lose the Nobel Prize in literature next. But no, they have not been.
The sequel, losing a second Nobel Prize.
Exactly.
All right, Brian. So you are an expert in astrophysics and the Big Bang and cosmology and experimental physics. Mm-hmm. But today we are going to be asking you about today's topic, which is about tardigrades. Have you heard of tardigrades before?
Yes. I used to receive a lot of negative ones in school for being late. Get it? That's quite good. Yes, I know about tardigrades. I don't call them tardigrades, I call them water bears.
All right.
And I understand there's not only plenty of them on Earth, but there's also a few in the heavens.
That's right. They have established a base.
Maybe you are an expert in tardigrades then.
Yes. Well, let's find out. The point of this game, Ask the Wrong Expert, is to see how scientists think when we take them out of their, you know, the little niche that they've developed an expertise in and ask them to think carefully about something else. And so that's why, Brian, we wanted to ask you questions about something that wasn't your field. So feel free to answer wildly and share your thoughts.
Okay.
And you haven't had time to look this up in Google or anything, right, Brian?
No, I promise.
No, I'm not Googling aloud.
I'm not looking on Wikipedia right now. I promise you.
First question is true or false? Tardigrades are sometimes called moss piglets.
Moss piglets. I'll say true.
All right. True or false, the name tardigrade means slow moving.
That sounds about right. True.
All right. True or false, Daniel named one of his children after tardigrades.
No, but I know that you have some rats in the house. So maybe you named a rat after a tardigrade.
You have water bears in your house?
He has water rats in his
house. I'm sure actually everybody does have water bears in their house. They're
That's
everywhere.
That's probably true. Yeah.
All right. Well, you are 3 for 3 on that one, Brian. I'm very impressed.
Wow.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the Academy, the Nobel Academy.
Oh, you're not done yet. We got more questions.
For you. Okay. All right.
There's a Nobel Prize for podcast guessing.
Guessing.
All right. Second question, Brian, is which evolved first, tardigrades or dinosaurs?
Ooh, that's a good one. You mean which is older? They're probably presumably co-evolved at some point.
Which came first, the water bear or the dinosaur?
I'm going to say some form of dinosaur, some form of creature that would have predated them, maybe.
So you're going with dinosaurs?
I'll go with some form of, you're making me reconsider. I'll go with tardigrade.
He's hedging. Fine. Jorge.
I'm hedgehogging. I'm moss pigleting.
Well, I appreciate your change of direction there. You were correct in your final answer, though not in your preliminary one. Tardigrades do outdate the dinosaurs.
Wow. Amazing. They don't look a day over 68 million years.
All right, next question. Tardigrades can live almost anywhere, but where do they like to live? A, volcanoes. B, under vending machines. C, a two-bedroom condo in Hollywood. Or D, any place damp.
I'm going to go with the last one, D.
I think lots of two-bedroom condos in Hollywood are probably pretty damp also.
That's true, too. Yeah, that's true. They can live wherever they want, probably. If they can live in space, they don't need water. So I'm gonna revise my answer, the C, then.
No, your first answer was right. It's damn place. Yeah. All right.
All right, next question is, what's the highest temperature a tardigrade can tolerate? Is it A, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, B, 300 degrees Fahrenheit, C, 1 million degrees Fahrenheit, or D, they have even survived LHC collisions at 5.5 million degrees?
I'm going to go with B.
You are a good guesser, Brian. That way you have a very, very deep knowledge.
Or a fast internet connection. Just kidding, I don't.
Are you feeding all these questions into Siri? Is she listening in and piping you the answers? All right, last question. Which of the two scenarios is more likely in your opinion? A, a robot revolution in which we all become slaves to artificial intelligence, or B, tardigrades building a civilization on the moon and becoming our lunar overlords?
Well, we know that they're living there now. They got there courtesy of an Israeli spacecraft. I'll say A is more likely because these little tardigrades are, you know, we're going to keep them at bay on the moon.
All right. Well, it's good to know that you worry more about AI revolution than the coming of our lunar apocalypse.
I want to see that movie where we become slaves to the artificial intelligence robots, but then the tardigrades come down from the moon to save us.
Ah.
And it's all just this great giant battle between water bears and robots. Maybe even some dinosaurs you could throw in.
This is giving me an idea for a new book, The Tardigrade Hypothesis.
That's a literature Nobel Prize right there.
That's right. Yeah, team up with Michael Bay. I'm sure that'll be a big hit.
That's right. I'll share the opening credits with you guys.
All right, thank you very much for playing our silly game and doing so well. We need to come up with some sort of prize. How about 10 tardigrades?
Yeah. Are you going
to
record his answering machine, Daniel, or maybe? Yeah,
right. All right, well, thanks very much for being a guest on the podcast. And folks, check out Brian's book. Tell us again, Brian, what it's called.
It's called Losing the Nobel Prize, and it is available in paperback as we speak, hopefully.
All right, so check that out, and you can lose your own Nobel Prize. All right, so Brian did pretty well in our quiz. I was impressed with how well he was able to answer questions about something he does not have a PhD in.
And so we'll get into what a tardigrade is, where can it survive, and where can you find them. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Physicists are famously sticklers for detail. And when it comes to the fine print contracts and hidden fees from wireless providers, I've learned that there's always a catch somewhere. So when I heard that the Mint Mobile wireless plans are just $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, where's the catch? But now I'm convinced there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online, so they cut out the cost of retail stores and they pass all those savings directly to you. Personally, I love using Mint Mobile. The calls are always crystal clear. So you can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/universe. That's mintmobile.com/universe. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/universe. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride.
We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're talking about tardigrades. What are they? Why are they so funny looking? Why are they so cute and scary at the same time?
They are crazy little creatures. And so for those of you who don't have a Google image in front of you, let's try to sketch it out for you in your mind.
Oh, man. Let's try to paint a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. And remember, they're tiny. All right. So first of all, these things are tiny. They range from 0.3 to 1.2 millimeters. So they're absolutely microscopic. But they do look a little bit like bears. I mean, except that they have eight legs.
Yeah, I think if anyone's not seen these before, I would describe them as like little plush teddy bear animals with like giant claws and horrifying mouths with teeth in it.
Face. The face is horrifying, right? You got the legs. So they've got eight legs, four on each side with little claws in them. And they're sort of poofy, like a pillow, you say. But the mouth, the face, that's the part that's terrifying because there's no discernible eyes. It's just like this sucking thing in the front.
Relying with teeth all around, right?
Yeah. Are you a watcher of Stranger Things?
I am, yeah. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I think that these things might have been the inspiration for the Demogorg or whatever that thing is that comes out of the Upside Down, because it also has this eyeless face that's featuring just a big mouth.
Yeah, lined with a bunch of teeth.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this thing would be really terrifying if it was the size of a school bus or, you know, even like a red wagon. It would be pretty scary. But the fact that it's microscopic means that, you know, it can't really do you any harm.
But still, it's pretty scary. And even though I know that they're only like a millimeter or less than a millimeter in length, it's scary to think that those things are out there. They could be on me, inside of me, maybe. I don't know. You tell me.
There are almost certainly some on you. I mean, these things are found everywhere. They are in sand dunes, they're in soil, they're in leaf litter, they're in water, especially like any sort of damp place at all, you'll find them. And if you scoop up like, you know, a liter of sort of gunky water near the edge of a pond, you probably get about 25,000 of them in a liter.
Like any old pond all over the world?
From the tops of mountains to, you know, wet, goopy places to basically everywhere. These things have adapted to live in almost every environment on Earth.
And just to be clear, are they insects? Are they bugs? Are they like bacteria? What are they? What do they officially classify under?
Well, they are not bacteria, right? They're multicellular. They actually are an animal. They're officially categorized as a microanimal, but they're in the kingdom Animalia. They're not an insect. They're not bacteria. They're not a microbe, but they are just a tiny, tiny, tiny little animal. And genetically, people think that they evolved to be tiny from something larger.
Oh, no kidding. They started out bigger.
Yeah.
That's not scary at all.
Exactly. It's an example of miniaturization. And, you know, I love when this happens in evolution, when things like change dramatically in scale, you know, like horses used to be much smaller and whales evolved from something much smaller. And these tardigrades evolved from something larger. Like, we don't know exactly how much larger, that there are some fossilized versions, but it's a bit of speculation. But imagine, like, you know, there could have been like a time when there were big tardigrades roaming the earth.
Yeah, like a hand-sized tardigrade or maybe even bigger.
But yeah, these are one of the tiniest little animals on earth.
And they've been on the news lately because apparently they've made it all the way to the moon somehow. There is now life on the moon.
There is now life on the moon. Yes, this Israeli lander they sent up to the moon had this project on it to sort of record human and earth DNA. And they said, you know, if something goes wrong on the earth, it might be good to have sort of like a backup copy of people and all sorts of other stuff somewhere else that's protected. So they were flying to the moon and they thought, oh, let's put some, you know, human DNA to bring up to the moon. And while we're at it, we'll bring some tardigrades.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? And then, of course, it crash landed, right? And a lot of it was vaporized. And people think that nothing survived except maybe the tardigrades, because they are really tough little critters. They are really, really hard to kill.
Yeah. So that's kind of what they're known for, right? It's their hardiness and their ability to survive even the craziest of environments.
Yeah, they are really hard to kill. And people have found them in all sorts of places on Earth. Like, they found them in hot springs. They find them in the Himalayas. They found them on the bottom of the ocean. They find them in layers of solid ice. And they've done all sorts of crazy experiments on them just to sort of test how far they can push the survival of a tardigrade.
Wow. So what are some of the most extreme conditions that we know that they can survive?
Well, one thing they've done is just like dose them with radiation. Because, you know, radiation is one thing that kills people, and it kills people when you're in outer space or when you're on the surface of the earth. And so what they've done is just like
stick them in the microwave, see what happens with some grapes, which is more exciting.
Yeah, exactly. No, they just like blasted them with gamma rays, you know, and it turns out that tardigrades can survive radiation doses that would kill humans and even more. Like they can survive radiation doses that are hundreds of times the radiation dose that would be deadly to a human being.
Wow. But my question is, how can they do that? How can they survive all of that radiation? Are they just made out of like tougher materials, or the DNA is just more like redundant, or what's their secret?
There are some organisms that are called extremophiles that are adapted to live in crazy environments like high radiation, etc. And some of those bacteria, for example, they have extra copies of their DNA, and just in case one of them gets blasted, they can recopy them, right? And so that's adapting for living in those environments. Tardigrades aren't like that. They're not adapted to live in these environments. They just sort of can survive because they're extra tough. And the way they do is they have this special protein inside their body that protects them. And these proteins can like turn into glass and helps them survive when it gets really, really dry, or when there's a lot of radiation, or basically when anything happens.
They have armor.
Yeah, exactly. But
like
it's
bio armor.
It's inside, right? It's not like a shell. It's something inside the body. Because the thing that happens when you get hit by radiation is that the stuff inside your body gets torn apart, right? It's the same problem that when you freeze, for example. Why can you not freeze a human being and then thaw them out? The reason is that when water freezes, it gets bigger, right? Ice is bigger than liquid water. And so each of your cells, for example, is a little bag of water. And when it freezes, it turns into ice, which is bigger than the cell membrane. And it basically bursts the cell. And so it's this internal
Wait. You mean Captain America could not have survived being frozen in the Arctic?
The Marvel Cinematic Universe, not a documentary. Sorry to break to you. That's right. That's right.
But somehow these little animals, they can survive being frozen, and they can survive super high temperatures and pressures and radiation. Mm-hmm. And you're saying it's all because they, something in like the liquid of their cells or something surrounding their cells kind of gives them that protection?
Yeah, it's like the liquid that's inside their cells is different from the liquid that's inside our cells. And it's hardier in that. Not hardier like you make a better soup, though maybe it would. I don't know what tardigrade soup tastes like. But it's hardier, like it's more robust.
Well, chances are you are probably eating a couple of tardigrades when you drink your soup, right? I mean,
every soup is tardigrade soup. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, every soup ever.
yeah, but it's the soup of the inside their cells that's more robust. So, for example, when they freeze, these proteins inside their cells turn into a kind of glass that protects the cell, right, from the inside.
Like it crystallizes into something unbreakable.
Yeah, it's described as turning into glass. I know the glass is not a crystal, so I'm not sure if crystallizing is exactly correct. But essentially, yeah, it instead of turning into an ice cube, which is bigger than the drop of water it originated from, it turns into this little bit of glass. And they call this, it has this awesome name, they call it cryptobiosis, right?
Oh, man. Yeah.
And so to survive these environments, the tardigrades, you know, these proteins turn into glass, and then they can do crazy stuff. Like they can survive outer space. You could just like throw tardigrades into space, collect them again and add water, and they wake up.
Put them in the microwave.
What we haven't done is put them in the LHC. That was a funny suggestion, but it's not something I'm aware of that we've actually done. It's like,
well, put it in the next proposal, Daniel. you could make a cryptobiotic breakthrough.
I'm going to build a tardigrade collider. I want to see what happens when you accelerate tardigrades to the speed of light and collide them against each other.
So it's kind of almost the opposite. When they freeze, instead of forming crystals that might break the cells, you're saying that it has some sort of something inside of their bodies that somehow hold it together so that you maybe don't get those crystals.
That's right. You don't get sort of ice crystals. Exactly. You get this other stuff which doesn't expand. Because remember, ice is sort of special, right? Ice is one of the few things that when you freeze it, it gets bigger. It's a special property of water. Most things in the universe, when you freeze them, they get smaller. And so this has some other stuff inside its cell so that when it freezes, it doesn't get bigger and so it avoids popping, even though we are mostly water.
And then how do they survive the high temperatures then? Is it just like a thick skin, or like everything's just held together better, or what?
They're just held together better. And so they can survive these high temperatures. They can survive these super low temperatures. They can even be dried out. And you can suck all the water out of these tardigrades, and it doesn't, again, it doesn't like rearrange what's inside them in a way that breaks them. It like naturally zips it up. And so they've seen these tardigrades, they can get down to like 1% of the normal moisture they have. You know, it's like beef jerky, it's like tardigrade jerky. And then you add water back and it just like flips up and goes about its business, happily chumping away.
Do you think it'd remember? Like, do you think it's still thinking when it's dehydrated?
I think we need to have one on the podcast so we can ask it these kind of questions. Yeah. What is it like to be a tardigrade?
Let's wait for them to evolve on the moon and then we'll ask them a question. So they can survive in, you're saying, volcanoes even? Like hot springs kind of up in the mountains?
Yeah.
The bottom of the sea?
Yeah, they can survive
outer space.
420 degrees Kelvin.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Down to 1 degree Kelvin, all the way up to 420 degrees Kelvin. It's really hard to kill these things.
What is 420 degrees Kelvin relative to like water boiling or a fire?
420 degrees Kelvin is about 150 degrees Celsius, which is higher than the boiling point of water. So you can make tardigrade soup and the tardigrades will still be happily swimming around inside.
Swimming around. drinking it with their horrifying mouth full of teeth.
That's right. So when you eat tardigrade soup, are you eating the tardigrades or are they eating you?
All right. And so they somehow ended up in space because the Israelis put him there as an experiment to see if they would survive the moon trip or in the moon. Is that kind of, so they were kind of thinking about landing these things on the moon or not?
They intended to land these things on the moon. That was the idea, right? But they had them sort of contained in a special little device. And they were, of course, in their cryptobiotic state. But when it crash landed, you know, all that whole thing got ruptured and they got, you know, tossed out and they're tumbling along on the surface of the moon now. And so, you know, if the right drop of water hits them, then they could wake up. And you might think, well, there's no chance you're going to get water on the moon, right? But that's not that unlikely because the surface of the moon is pelted constantly by rubble from outer space. And some of that is ice, right? A huge fraction of the stuff that's out there in the solar system is ice. So you have this momentary impact of basically high-speed ice on the surface of the moon. If it just happens to hit a tardigrade, it could melt, turn into water, wake up that tardigrade. Hello, you're on the moon.
What? What's going on? Where am I? What? I'm on the moon? Last thing I knew, I was in Israel.
Yeah, because when they go into this cryptobiotic state, they're not dead, right? They're not totally paused. Their metabolism is actually still going, but it goes down to 0.01% of its normal metabolism. So that's like 1 in 1,000. So it's like your body is running at 1/1,000th of its normal speed.
Wow, that's amazing.
I don't know what that's like, though, but I'd love to know.
All right, let's get into what it means to have tardigrades on the moon. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride, we're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're talking about tardigrades on the moon. And so there are now tardigrades on the moon, kind of on purpose, but kind of by accident also, right? I mean, we meant to send them to the moon, but they got out.
That's right. They
like
got
in
out.
Like in a bad science fiction movie.
Nobody could imagine this stuff. And if they did, nobody would believe it, right? But it is our life. This is our universe. There are tardigrades on the moon. We don't know if they're walking around. We don't know if they're munching on stuff. But they are there.
And can they survive? Is there stuff for them to eat? What do tardigrades eat?
Yeah, that's a great question. Tardigrades, they eat plants and they eat little bacteria because remember, they're super tiny. And sometimes they also eat tardigrades.
So maybe there's only one tardigrade on the moon right now.
It's one big tardigrade now and it's hungry.
It ate all the other ones.
It's a grumpy tardigrade and it's looking to come back to Earth for lunch.
All right. Well, good job, humans. You've now colonized the moon.
That's right. Or our little allies, hopefully our friendly little allies have colonized the moon. And, you know, it's funny to joke about like tardigrades on the moon surviving sort of some sort of global apocalypse or catastrophe the humans bring on. But, you know, tardigrades have already survived a lot of global catastrophes.
Yeah, that's right. They've been around. I mean, we've said it before. They've been around longer than the dinosaurs, which means they've seen it all. They've seen it all. They've seen everything else come and go.
Right. They're bored, right? They're not interested in climate change and nuclear apocalypse. To them, that's no big deal. They've seen crazier stuff. You know, in the history of our planet, we've had five of these things we call mass extinctions, where something happens that changes the climate or the environment and a lot of species die. And we've had five of those so far. And tardigrades predate even the first one. They evolved before the first mass extinction and they're still here, which means they've survived all five of them.
Right. That's a little suspicious if you ask me, if you think about it, isn't it?
You think that makes them suspect number one?
Yeah, I mean, there isn't any other suspect.
I think it's pretty awesome. I'm amazed. I love these little creatures. I mean, I don't want to see one the size of a school bus walking into my backyard, and they are a little creepy, but they're also sort of awesome. Like, what evolutionary path led to them? Could we survive this way? Like, could we copy this technology somehow to become more radioactive, more protective from radiation? It seems so awesome when evolution finds a little niche to reveal secrets to you.
And it's amazing to think about what we must look like to them, you know? Imagine being such a hardy being and seeing all these other animals around you that are really, if you think about it, compared to them, we're super fragile and really vulnerable.
That's right. We're these huge, squishy meat bags, right? All you have to do is poke us and boom, it's over.
Yeah, just a little poke.
These are crazy little creatures. There's also a lot of really other fun little facts you can learn about them. Like they actually molt like snakes do. You know, they shed their skin.
What?
Yeah. They really are tiny little creatures. I mean, they're the size of microbes, but they really are animals. It's sort of like Ant-Man, you know, like actually getting shrunk down to the microscopic world and living among these creatures.
Like they have organs inside and everything?
Oh, yeah. No, they poop and everything. Like they eat, they poop, they are little creatures. Yeah, absolutely.
There's tardy poop?
There might be tardy podcasts for all we know.
So they molt like snakes?
Yeah, they molt like snakes. And there's lots of little versions of them. There's one that I find particularly hilarious that doesn't poop except when it molts. It's like, It holds it in for months, and then it gets rid of its skin and just leaves it all behind. So I'm not sure we really want to adopt like all of the culture of these tardigrades. You know, there's some things we just want to pick and choose. It's like a buffet.
Well, I don't know. You know, if you only had to go to the bathroom once every couple of months, that would save you a lot of time and conserve water, which might be in low supply in the future.
Yep, that's true. If you're holding that all in, you might also want to leave that skin behind because it seems kind of soiled.
All right, so those are tardigrades, little tiny actual animals, not insects, not bugs, not bacteria, but actual little animals that will probably outlive all of us.
Almost certainly outlive all of us. And you know, each individual tardigrade doesn't actually live that long. They only live for like 3 months, maybe up to 2 years. But
really?
Then, of course, yeah, they reproduce.
I mean, unless they get frozen in space or something.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah, then they can live longer. But sort of like alive time, unfrozen time, is not that long. So it's not like there are like 1,000-year-old tardigrades combing the earth, you know, with ancient wisdom in them or anything.
Oh, man. They're busy. They're busy getting busy.
They are. They're male tardigrades. They're female tardigrades. There's a whole society. You know, they probably have dating apps. They've been around a lot longer than us, so they've got this thing figured out.
Oh, wow. Yeah, to survive at that scale and that they must be pretty busy reproducing, right?
Mm-hmm. There are definitely more tardigrades are unearthed than people.
All right, I'm just going to go have some nightmares right now. And
well, you
thank
know,
you, Daniel.
Just like your house cat would be terrifying if it was larger, these things are tiny, and so you don't have to worry about them. Well, thanks to Jaisel for writing in and asking us to talk about tardigrades. They're a really fun subject. Hope you enjoyed it.
And when next time you look up at the moon, you can know that we have some neighbors out there.
And wave to the moon and be friendly, because we don't know what their intentions are.
We hope you enjoyed that. See you next time.
If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge, that's one word, or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.